What's going on, Eagles fans across the globe? This is Lou DiBiase joining you on the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Happy Wednesday. Happy Thanksgiving Eve. Turkey Day is tomorrow. And of course, since it is Wednesday, that means it's time for the flagship show of the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is Crossover Wednesday. I'm going to kick it over to Gino Camilleri in segment two here as he sat down with the host of Locked On Dolphins, one of the best guys, not just for Dolphins football insight, but just NFL football in general, quarterback evaluations, draft evaluation, film study. Travis is one of the best in the business, and seeing him and Gino, who is an X's and O's nerd just like Travis, sit down and talk for about a half hour is a really good listen, so I'm going to kick it over to them in a minute as they preview this Eagles-Dolphins battle in South Beach in Miami on Sunday. The Eagles at 5-6, an opportunity here to get back to 500 against a 2-9 football team that is just really depleted when it comes to their roster. For the most part, if you were making an assumption about what their plans have been throughout the 2019 season, it's really the 2020 NFL draft. It appears they are tanking when they trade away Laremy Tunsil and they trade away Minkah Fitzpatrick for draft picks. They're going all in on the future here. So that's an opportunity for the Eagles. Not a lot of excuses if you lose this football game, even on the road. They control their own destiny. They need to win all five games most likely to make the playoffs. And this is a really good start to really spark that run that has happened in 2017 and 2018. So we'll see if they can do it again on Sunday. What's it going to take on the offensive side of the football that desperately needs to rebound after two horrible weeks? What's it going to take on defense? Can the defense continue their absolutely strong month of November here in Miami? That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a short break. And then on the other side, it's Gino Camilleri and Travis Wingfield on another edition of Crossover Wednesday. We'll be right back, Eagles fans.
It is one day before the best holiday in America, on the planet possibly. Food, football, family, alcohol, you cannot beat Thanksgiving. Make sure you get yourself some action on the games with MyBookie. But now, let's go ahead and transition to next week, week 13. We are on to Philadelphia and Crossover Wednesday here on the Locked On Dolphins podcast. And joining the podcast now is the host of Locked On Eagles. And we had a bit of a laugh off air because as Dolphins fans, this game, we want to lose it for the most part. That's kind of the idea of this season, getting better draft position. But it's a very, very important game for the road team. So we welcome in the host of Locked On Eagles here on the Locked On Podcast Network. He is Gino Camilleri. I told you I'd butcher it, Gino. Welcome into the show, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, Travis, it's been a long time coming. Been following you and your work at for the Miami Locked On Dolphins, rather, for quite some time, and you put out some good information. You did have quite the take on my boy at Oregon, Justin Herbert, the other day. I almost had to respond to you about that, but I don't like to get in too many debates on Twitter, but we can have a discussion for that another day. But I'm right there with you. I do not like the Bills, and I'm sure many Dolphins fans don't either, so I'm on your side many of these games. But this coming Sunday, I might actually have to be on the Dolphins side because I may want them to miss the playoffs to get a better draft pick. But
listen to that.
This is a game that we need.
Listen to that. That's crazy. That's kind of where we are in 2019 in the NFL. Almost said 2020. Mm-hmm. Tells you where my mind's at as far as football goes. This year is already over to me. I've moved on. But, you know, the funny thing about Gino and his co-host Louis is they're both from Buffalo, so they equally hate the Bills just like all of us do, even though the Bills are in the midst of an 8-3 season right now. That's neither here nor there. Let's talk some
Favorite
Eagles
Tigers.
Real quick, Gino. Yeah, right. Let's talk some Eagles real quick because Carson Wentz, I bragged on this podcast earlier about some of my quarterback acumen. It's funny you bring up Justin Herbert. We'll like you said, we'll take that off air for another day. But one of the things that I started with quarterbacks was 2016. I really went in on the film, and I was not satisfied with what I saw from Carson Wentz. And then in 2017, I thought he was, if not the best quarterback in the league, one of them. So just kind of give me a diatribe. What the hell's going on with Carson Wentz? Like the extension that fans are mad about that, the injuries, the fact that he maybe hasn't had that franchise quarterback, you know, signature moment. Like give me where you're coming from and how that might differ from the fan base with regards to Carson Wentz.
Yeah, that's funny that you said you looked at 2016, you didn't like what you saw in 2017, you thought he made a lot of improvements. And that's the great thing about this day and age, is we have this vast amount of information we can bring in such a quick amount of time. And you look on Twitter this day and age, and it's very reactionary and revisionist history-ish. But if you take the context from what Carson had in 2016, 2017, 18, and 19, it varies in many different regards. But let's look at 2019. There's been very good Carson, and there's been some very, very bad Carson. And that's the thing about Carson Wentz, is that in times when nobody else is doing anything, he tries to do it all. And he gets into trouble, and you could see it, and it's one of these running jokes we have on Eagles Twitter. It's like, oh, here comes a Carson Wentz interception, because if they get down early and they need a big comeback and they're down maybe three touchdowns, Wentz throws an interception 9 times out of 10 because he tries to force the ball. But the thing with him forcing the ball this season is because he has to. Yep. It's not out of need. It's out of necessity. Outside of Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, and Miles Sanders, who are two tight ends and a running back, he's gotten vastly no help from his wide receiver position. Up until 2 weeks ago, or up until the Patriots game last week, was just the worst Carson Wentz I've ever seen. Wentz had them in every single game that they were in, outside of Dallas and Minnesota. That was on the defense, that was on Carson. We'll get into that on Lockdown Eagles. You can go subscribe to that. We already did touch on those. But in the games where he was kind of up and down, you see when wide receivers struggle to separate and when they struggle to have a downfield element. And you saw that in 17 when they had a guy who wasn't even a very good wide receiver, and Torrey Smith still had one very unique skill set. And that's the ability to get down the field. Coupled with the addition of Frank Reich and John DeFilippo in the offseason, who were two of the offensive masterminds behind that 2017 run, John DeFilippo really came in and made Carson Wentz the quarterback that he was with his mechanics. Come 2 years later, we talk about everything in context, he now has a coordinator who was fired by his dad at the University of Virginia, who runs a very basic offense. You have Doug Peterson, who is so up and down in his play calling. You were out your right tackle, your right guard, your running back number one, and three wide receivers last week. Not many quarterbacks are going to produce with that type of talent around them, and Carson Wentz tried to force the ball, and he's done that time and time again. I have seen enough out of Carson to know what I know about him, and he's a franchise quarterback. I can't believe that we sat through the years of Kevin Cobb and we saw Mike Kafka for a little bit, and just these names that are not even in the NFL anymore. And now we have a guy like Carson who's getting this Donovan McNabb-esque treatment and being ridiculed for every little thing that he does. But in reality, Carson Wentz, his adjusted completion percentage this year would put him top 10 in the league if his wide receivers came down with these balls. In Atlanta and Detroit, he was let down by his wide receivers on two sure touchdown catches. In the Patriots game, he put a ball up to Nelson Agholor that was one of the greatest throws I've seen Carson Wentz throw in quite a long time, and it was dropped. And they should have been playing for overtime with an 8-2 record. This season has just gone off the rails for so many reasons. Do I blame Carson? A little bit. Do I blame the guys around him who haven't stepped up and made plays when they've needed to? I blame them a lot more than I blame Carson Wentz. When you look around the league and you're seeing guys like Deebo Samuel make the catch he made last week, or in Miami, Preston Williams and Devontae Parker having rejuvenated seasons with Fitzmagic up until Preston Williams got hurt, we're not getting these plays from wide receivers that are like, oh man, this is a catch he shouldn't have made. We haven't had one of those until garbage time with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside last week against the Seahawks. So a lot of it is on the game plan. A lot of it is on the coaching. A lot of it is on the playmakers around him. But ultimately, Carson has not been himself.
Yeah, and I think context is super important when it comes to anything with football, because a lot of the Eagles accounts that I follow, and for some reason I follow a bunch of you guys. I don't know how that happened, but you have so many good guys producing good content for you. Absolutely. And they're all on the same page that Carson Wentz has been not getting the help that he deserves. And I tend to agree with that. You made two points I want to circle back on here before we get to our final point. Gino. And that's when I operated my website called thirdandten.com, where I evaluated quarterbacks, created my own grading system. In 2017, the thing that I did the most was I evaluated their third down performances, and Carson Wentz destroyed, not just beat, annihilated the field on third down passing, because he was so special going off script and making, you know, improvisational, you know what I'm trying to say.
Improvisational. Yeah, I think
making plays like that. It was so much fun to watch. And the second thing I wanted to dovetail off of here, which is my last question I really have for you, besides a prediction for this game, was the offensive line, because I think that there is one guy in particular that I've heard kind of, his name's been thrown out there, at least among Dolphins fans, and you can go ahead and squash this if you want, as a possible trade candidate, and that's Lane Johnson, the right tackle, who frankly should have been a Dolphin back on draft day in 2013 to begin with. We took Deion Jordan, but we'll go ahead and just forget that ever existed. So I want to know about Lane Johnson, the offensive line, and also this crazy Brandon Brooks story that I just heard about, and as someone that is very close to mental health, you know, disabilities within my own family, I took a lot from what he said about the situation on Sunday and the anxiety and the panic attack that he had, that is really picked up by nauseating, vomiting symptoms every single Sunday that he has to go through that. So tell me about Lane Johnson, tell me about Brandon Brooks and the future of the Eagles offensive line.
Well, one thing I can say is that if there is ever going to be a staple on the face of the Eagles offensive line, it is going to be the right side. And I don't see Lane Johnson going anywhere, and they just inked Brandon Brooks to an extension through 2024. And the reason being is that if you look at the splits with Lane Johnson in the lineup versus out of the lineup, they can't move the football when he's not there. They had to change their entire game plan the last 2 weeks when Lane Johnson wasn't in the game. It just is a debilitating factor for them to have. And then we were already out Lane. We throw a guy in Andre Dillard, who is a rookie,
go Cougs,
left tackle at right tackle. That's like learning to read Chinese in a day. Yeah. It's insane. And Brandon Brooks, this is so much bigger than football, what he does. Yeah. And it affects a lot of people. Me, my fiance, we both have very severe anxiety, and it's a real thing. If you've never been through it and understood it, and Brandon Brooks has been very vocal about this, saying that he said every Sunday he wakes up, vomits, goes and plays a football.
Crazy. It's crazy, that story.
That is something that many people will never have to understand. And to perform on a level where you're getting people on Twitter and media and everybody else saying, oh, you should be playing better and blah, 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 blah. Even though Brandon Brooks is Superman to me, he's coming off an Achilles tear and is playing some of the best ball within a calendar year of tearing arguably your most fragile ligament in your body. And he's playing at an all-pro level, and he still has to deal with factors outside of football. And when you're going on Twitter and bashing people, just remember that there is a side outside of him putting on your favorite team's jersey. He is a person underneath it all. And I think that's the one thing that Brandon Brooks has done an excellent job at being vocal about. And I think the team is 100% behind him, especially Jeffrey Lurie. His son has autism, so there are a lot of disabilities that this team supports, and mental health and autism with Lurie's foundation have been at the top of it for the longest time. And hats off to Brandon Brooks for staying strong. And it's somebody you don't ever want to see leave Philadelphia. I said he should never wear another jersey, and thankfully, fingers crossed, he won't, at least through 2024. This side of this crossover Wednesday, now hosting, is your host of the Locked On Eagles podcast, Gino Camilleri, as always, joined by Travis Wingfield, who introed himself on the outro. I know that's a lot of mismatching going on in our heads, but Travis, this is a game for the Dolphins. You guys want to lose. I know you have the tank for Tua in your sights. I'm a big fan of Justin Herbert. We mentioned that discussion that we'll have for another day. There's guys like Joe Burrow and a whole bunch of names. Us Eagles fans, we want a wide receiver, so we're just as needy at a position, not as an important position as a quarterback would be, as we know in us having Carson Wentz. But what's it like in Miami right now? Is there like a lot of adhesion between the fan base, or is everybody on page with, yeah, we have to get a quarterback, we have these 14 draft picks, we know what the end goal is?
Well, shoot, you guys could probably remake your entire receivers room just on this draft alone. It's got to be the best receiver class in the history of the league, and for the sure. Next year's might be better. It's crazy, man. So you guys are in good shape that way. But as far as the Dolphins go, I mean, if there's a Dolphins game or a Dolphins event going on, bet your bottom dollar that there's going to be a divisive argument about whatever that is going on, and the fan base will split equally down the middle. I've had people tell me that, you know, Tua is not going to matter if you can't get an offensive line in front of him. And it's like, how long have you been watching football for, man? Like, the quarterback is the thing that makes things go. You guys know how that went in 2017 with Wentz and Foles playing as well as they did. And it's just, there's a section of the fan base that thinks that Tua is awesome, which I think is most of the fan base. And I keep saying that name to you because he's the guy that we've had our sights set on since forever. Mm-hmm. And even the hip injury still, to me, hasn't deterred that, because as long as he makes a full recovery, it's Tua or bust as far as I'm concerned. I like Joe Burrow. The playmaking ability is there, but I'm still just a little bit weary about a one-year wonder, especially playing in a scheme that's so quarterback-friendly, and you just can't guarantee that he'll get that at the next level. Now, if he came to Miami, I do believe he would have that, because I'm a big fan of Chad O'Shea's offense. But, yeah, the fan base pretty much agrees lock, stock, and barrel. You got to find a quarterback, and this is probably the year to do it. Even though next year's class has some promising names, Miami's going to have a top three pick in this year's draft, and it's going to be either Tua or Burrow, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and the whole thing going on right now is you look around Cincinnati. I know you guys have that big matchup coming up in regards to draft picks, but a lot of teams are going this route of tanking almost. But I believe Miami is doing it the right way. If you're going to go and reshape your roster, don't leave any loose ends. Just make it right in the way that you want to do it. And I'm sitting here. I'm a Buffalo Sabres fan. I talk hockey sometimes on our podcast. And we're sitting here, and we had a team that finished in second-to-last place last year, and they moved out one player. So Miami, they're doing it right. They're getting everybody off the books that they want to. They're coming in with a fresh load of draft picks and still have some pieces for the future. I mean, you look at a guy like Xavien Howard and Mike Gesicki. Those guys are playmakers. I believe Gesicki has been coming into his own this year. Who are some other guys that have been going under the radar that the national media may not be putting their name out there as much? I know Preston Williams, a UDFA, until he got hurt, was absolutely killing it this year. Unfortunately, goes down to injury. But there are some guys on that Miami team that I wouldn't mind here in Philly.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Mike Gesicki, because he really caught a lot of flack last year, and probably rightfully so, because he was just – he wasn't ready for prime time. We joked that he was a baby giraffe out there getting knocked around, kind of like Brock Osweiler does every single week back when he played. But he's really come along and improved that functional strength and that contact balance and just fighting through the physical nature of the NFL world and, you know, the game of football in itself. And you mentioned some pass catchers. Devontae Parker, man, what a resurgence he's had this year. And it really is a testament to his rededication to the craft, as he's really put himself in position to stay healthy. And that was the number one thing with him, was that he always had these nicks and bruises, and now he's played every single game this year, hasn't been missing practices, and since the bye week, he is the second leading receiver in the AFC behind only Tyreek Hill. So he's come on strong. Preston Williams, the undrafted rookie, was on track to break the Super Bowl era record for receiving yards for an undrafted rookie, and he was going to do that pretty easily before he tore the ACL. So we're excited about him. On the other side of the ball, you probably haven't heard his name a lot this year, but first-round pick Christian Wilkins has really come on lately with his run defense, and that was kind of where they wanted to get him going, because at Clemson, he was a pass-rushing dynamo who one-gapped and shot upfield and got into the backfield and made life miserable on opposing quarterbacks, and now he's doing more two-gapping where he has to stack and shed and kind of hold the point of attack, and he's getting better every single week. I just put a thread up on my timeline where he's just punching guys with that initial stab and discarding them and getting himself into the run gap and making plays on the football. So he's come a long way. I think in the linebacker core, we've got a guy named Vince Beagle, who was traded for Kiko Alonso, of all people, who, if you're Eagles fans, you know too much about Kiko Alonso. And there's a faction of the Dolphins fan base that thought he was good, but he wasn't. He was terrible for every year that he was here. And they traded Kiko Alonso for Vince Beagle. And all Beagle has done has been one of the top 15 or so pass rushers in terms of efficiency rate off the edge. So a couple of guys that most people probably don't know about, but they are building some nice bottom of the roster, some middle of the roster guys before next year's offseason spending spree, where, Gino, I did a little fun mock offseason this morning because I was bored, and I've got guys like Jadeveon Clowney and Brandon Scherff and Kyler Fackrell signing free agency. Then I go out and I draft, you know, seven guys in the top 100. They could remake this roster pretty much in one offseason to the vision they see fit, and with Brian Flores and Chad O'Shea, I'm excited about what they have going forward.
Yeah, without a doubt, and I think the organization is fully behind that. And in a division which, what's the future there? I mean, you have Tom Brady. Who knows how much longer he's going to be there? The Jets are, who knows the direction of their team? They're making good signings, making some good picks, but still have some very, very bad positions. And Buffalo, a team that they
They believe they have their quarterback. They have a sound defense, but can they really beat anybody? And it seems like Miami is in a very good spot moving forward, but I'm sure you'll talk about that plenty on Lockdown Dolphins moving into the offseason. We're concerned about Sunday. For you, what keeps you up at night thinking about this Philadelphia Eagles team come Sunday?
If you guys find a way to lose a game, because that's not what we want. we want the L, man. Like so the Colts game a few weeks back was the Dolphins probably should have lost that game, but they found a win. They beat the Jets in a resounding fashion. That was fun for a little bit. But now that they don't control their own destiny for the first pick in the draft, and the Bengals basically just laid down and went with Ryan Finley to win that or to lose all the games that they needed to win to get out of that first position, now Miami's probably going to pick somewhere like in the 2-3, maybe even the 4 range. But the injury to Tua puts him right back into our lap, most likely, if we want him. So all good there. But as far as the Eagles go, the Dolphins secondary has been holding on by a thread for the last several weeks, and that thread snapped on Sunday because they put Rashad Jones and Bobby McCain on the injured reserve to join Xavier Howard, who was, you know, been there for several weeks now. They've moved Eric Rowe back to safety, and you guys are going to see these types of names that I'm sure at least half of your fan base has never heard of. You're going to see Jamal Wiltz. You're going to see Adrian Colbert. You're going to see Stephen Parker. You're going to see Nick Needham and Ryan Lewis as the primary defensive backs. Have you heard of any of those guys? Because most football fans coming into the year had not, and that includes me, so we had to learn about these guys. And they're playing well within like the structure of a Brian Flores defense, who I still think he and Belichick basically put the clamps on the Sean McVay experience in the NFL last year in the Super Bowl, and they still have not recovered from that. And we've seen some good design both on the defensive and offensive side of the ball, but man, this roster is Canadian Football League, Extreme Football League worthy. A bunch of guys that probably wouldn't be playing in the league right now have jobs because of this Dolphins hard rebuild and tear down tank job, whatever you want to call it. And some guys are finding, you know, a niche role in the scheme that way, but for the most part, a lot of these guys just don't belong on the NFL field, and we'll probably see the discrepancy show up on Sunday with the Eagles.
Yeah, so we do a good job at Lockdown Eagles getting the names about a lot of players, especially around draft season out there. So they're rather familiar with Christian Wilkins. Me and Lou were big advocates of bringing him into Philadelphia. Very good player in his own right. Ryan Lewis, he was on the team in Philly here for about 2 weeks, I think.
That's right. I forgot about that.
We cut him, and then he went to Miami. And then Eric Rowe, he is our he was Chip Kelly's messiah and the rest of the organization's pariah, I would say. He kind of was in and out of town really quickly. Alshon Jeffrey made his famous catch in the Super Bowl over Eric Rowe. You shipped Kiko out of town, but I would love to see a Winnipeg Blue Bombers versus Miami Dolphins matchup. I think that'd be pretty cool now that you mentioned CFL. I did watch the Grey Cup the other day. I am a big advocate of the CFL. That is an electric football league if you've never caught it, but yeah, Miami, this is a team, like I mentioned, that Philadelphia needs a get-right game. I'm sitting here watching what their defensive line did last week. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is a guy who last season absolutely demolished this team week two. I don't want any Fitzmagic to be anywhere around that Miami Dolphins team because we've seen the wrath of Fitzpatrick. I need this defensive line to get there, and the offensive line, I can't name two offensive linemen on Miami. I'm sorry, Travis, but I know since Tunsil left, it's been rough up front for them. But if Miami was to pull out a victory in this game, what do you think is an X factor that Philadelphia might not be ready for?
Well, it has been the worst offensive line in the history of the NFL, as far as I'm concerned. We haven't even broached that topic yet, so good on you for getting there. It's crazy how bad the offensive line is. They're playing a guy at left tackle right now, Julian Davenport, who does... Just watch the game on Sunday. You'll know what I'm talking about. It's so bad. But as far as the X factor, man, a couple weeks ago I could have given you one, but it just doesn't exist right now. They're so thin at so many key positions because of putting guys on IR, shutting guys down, and we're finally getting into the war of attrition portion of the season where they just can't overcome the talent deficiency through scheme like they did for a couple of weeks against the Jets and the Colts. But you mentioned Ryan Fitzpatrick. It has to be him because there are plays, you know, this Dolphins third down offense is actually the best it's been in the last 4 years, going back to the Adam Gase era. And that's a hilarious indictment of what Adam Gase is, because this team can't block, they can't run the ball, and they are very thin at receiver and tight end. So where do they actually, you know, excel in terms of what they do offensively? But it's because of Ryan Fitzpatrick making plays off script on third down. Expect to see him extend a couple of drives on third and six or third and seven by breaking the pocket and escaping pressure and either throwing the ball down the field or picking it up with his legs. So if you can keep Ryan Fitzpatrick contained off of his initial, you know, move off the spot, you'll destroy this offense. You're going to destroy it anyway, but you can really bury it if you contain Ryan Fitzpatrick on those third and long scrambles.
Yeah, we saw that last year, and that's just been one thing that has killed this Philadelphia Eagles team. What do you think happens on Sunday? Do you think Miami pulls out a miracle, which would not be a miracle for many fans? It would kind of be rather the opposite, knowing that you guys have that number one draft pick in sight. As an Eagles fan and as someone who covers the Eagles just from an X's and O's standpoint, things can't get much worse than what happened on offense last week. So I think there's nowhere to go but up from here. I think the Eagles have a game that they should go in good weather, hopefully down there in Florida, and just an environment that's away from home. It's in Miami against a team that they should beat. I see them winning this game. I'm sure that's what you're going to say, but I'd love to hear your predictions on it.
Yeah, you mentioned get right game, and that's exactly where I'm going to go with this thing. I know the Eagles offense has struggled, and it primarily funnels through the lack of receiving explosion they have out wide. And we talked about the secondary of this Dolphins defense. They're well coached, and so they're going to be in good position, but you can just physically outmatch them with superior talent. And even though the Eagles are short on that right now at receiver, you're still talking about guys that came into the league, you know, maybe high profile draft picks like Nelson Aguilar, for instance, and you're going up against undrafted free agents and street free agents, you know, Ryan Lewis's of the world. And you just, the talent discrepancy, even though you might not be the best for the Philadelphia Eagles, is still very stark. And that's where you're going to get, I think, this Dolphins team. And the fact that they don't rush the passer like at all. They're bottom in pressure rate, hurry rate, and sacks in the NFL right now. So Carson Wentz is going to have all day back there to throw. He can get healthy. He can make a sandwich back there. He can carve up the Dolphins defense for probably 300 yards and several touchdowns. So to me, this game is really leaning towards like something like 37-10, just probably over before it starts, and I would assume a couple of quick Eagles touchdown drives will put this game to bed early.
Yeah, hopefully the matchup come 4 years from now, or maybe sooner if the Dolphins rebuild gets into gear and we meet in the Super Bowl.
That'd yeah,
be
baby.
Quite the thinking. I know you'd be pretty happy. I'd be happy myself. But hopefully 4 years from now this matchup is a lot more competitive. I do think this is the game the Eagles need. It was one of those games that we've been saying you have a friendly stretch at the back half of this schedule. You need to win this game. You need to win two against the Giants. You need to beat Washington. And it all comes down to beating Dallas, who hopefully Buffalo will, maybe they'll end in a tie, and I think both of our fan bases would be happy. I think that would be the only way I can come out happy with this game on Thanksgiving. But, Travis, thank you for joining us on this Crossover Wednesday. Let our fans know at Lockdown Eagles where they can find you, because Travis puts out a ton of good work. He does great things with quarterbacks. You guys should definitely look at his work, and Travis, let them know where they can find you.
Yeah, it's a constant barrage of content on my timeline. It's at Wingfield NFL. I pretty much am on the tweet deck all day long. I write every day for LockedOnDolphins.com and, of course, the daily podcast over at Locked On Dolphins.
All right, everybody, that'll do it here on this Crossover Wednesday edition of Locked On Eagles and Locked On Dolphins. And good luck to you, Travis. Thank you for joining us. And as always, I'm Gino Camilleri. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. And fly, Eagles, fly.